Ladies and gentlemen, I know that some of you are still eating and some of you are still standing up. Do feel free just to occupy any of the unoccupied seats. I hate to see working journalists having to stand. It's a terrible thing. Welcome to the Foreign Correspondents Club. Very happy today to host this lunch, which is going to be an opportunity for the Hong Kong Transition Project to present the results of their analysis of the current, or pending, I should say, district elections. It's a secret, but apparently they're due to take place on Sunday. It's almost nobody knows this, but never mind. I'm very happy that we are able to host this event, because as someone who's been reporting on Hong Kong politics for many years, I can tell you that I have shamelessly used Transition Project material in countless articles and found it of very high quality and very useful. Just before I introduce the speakers, can I remind you, we have tomorrow another lunch. This is with Andrew Roy, who is the head of global news at BBC World Service, BBC World Service Television, I think. There are still, I think, some places available for that. And we have, I don't think I'll announce other events. This is the upcoming event. We have a few more events in November, and as you know, in December we slow down a bit to make way for another pagan festival which takes place in December. Today, our two speakers are, I'm happy to say, very well known to members of this club, Michael de Gaulier and Sunny Lowe, both formerly of the Baptist University, but Sunny Lowe has just moved to the Hong Kong Institute of Education. It makes no difference. They are veterans of this kind of analysis. And the way we're going to do this is Michael de Gaulier is going to present an overview, and Sunny will then move in and talk more specifically about some of the projections for the election on Sunday. So please welcome Michael de Gaulier.
Yeah, Sunny's actually been off in the wilds and the cold of Waterloo, Canada for the last several years and has now come back to Hong Kong, so we're really happy to have him back. What I'm doing is just setting up the context of these elections. We did a survey that finished up the first week of October, so it's just a few weeks ago. This was a survey that was commissioned by the National Democratic Institute for International Affairs, but we're not going to hold them responsible for any of the results. We are coming to the final election of the Donald Zhang regime. What you have here first setting up in terms of life in Hong Kong, you can take a view of the colonial period. We had Chris Patten in town just a few days ago. People were pretty happy during that time. Under Dong Chi-hwa, they were not so happy. And under Donald Zhang, kind of mid-range, as you can see, perhaps trending a bit downward until we got a bounce here in this survey. What is of more significance, I think, is satisfaction with the performance of the Hong Kong government. And as you can see, after a long honeymoon in which people were, I think, very relieved that Donald Zhang was not Dong Chi-hwa, we have now begun to see that dissatisfaction is exceeding satisfaction rather steadily. Though there was a recent bounce down again in that dissatisfaction level. Now, that was with the Hong Kong government. And what you can see when you look at it in terms of those people who say a particular party represents them best, and what we have here are the three groups that gave us the largest proportion in our survey, about 9% each of the sample, saying that either the Civic Party, the Democratic Party, or the DAB best represents them. And what's really of interest on this slide is that of the party, the DAB, which is called pro-government, you have about a third who are dissatisfied with the performance of the Hong Kong government. This is also unusually high. And as you can see also, we are going out on the highest level of dissatisfaction with Donald Zhang's performance, now over 60%. So basically, any party that would seem to be affiliated with the government and or Donald Zhang would be, well, rather, you might think, unpopular. And this is even the case with, again, with the so-called pro-democratic DAB folks, or pro-government, excuse me, pro-government DAB folks, almost half dissatisfied with Donald Jung. So in this election, we're not expecting to see anything like this. And in case you don't recognize this, this is a guy in 2007. This was his campaign poster. He was a DAB candidate. And he looks a lot like, well, this guy. Okay, and if you can't tell the difference, one of them is the chief executive and the other is not. But they both have a bow tie. Not this time. What's also of interest, I think, is looking again at the SAR government dealing with the PRC government. Under Donald Jung, we have never had dissatisfaction higher than satisfaction until just a few weeks ago in the survey. This is very different from the situation in 2007. And if you look back at 2007, you can see that satisfaction was much higher than dissatisfaction. So this is a very different context in this regard. And again, you can see even the DAB, in terms of handling affairs and relations with the PRC, about 1 in 5 dissatisfied with this. What's even more significant, I think, is dissatisfaction with the PRC handling HK SAR affairs, And again, the difference between 2007 and today is remarkable, because 2007, we were going into the Beijing Olympics of 2008 when we had virtual unanimity of satisfaction, and now we're very close to that point to where satisfaction and dissatisfaction cross. And you can even see those who say the DAB best represents them, a very large 1 out of 5 who are dissatisfied with the performance of the PRC government and how it deals with the SAR government. This is an even more stunning result. It's also extremely different from 2007. We have actually, for the first time since 1997, more dissatisfaction than satisfaction with the performance of the PRC government ruling China. Okay? Now, this is an utterly transformed public opinion circumstance from what it was in 2007. And it also should be, I think, somewhat disturbing to the folks. Well, they used to be up on the West Wing. Where are they now? Somewhere out of the harbor. What's also amazing is those folks who say the DAB best represents them. You can see about 1 out of 5 say they are dissatisfied with the performance of the PRC government in ruling China. Okay? So again, if we were talking about the so-called iron vote of the DAB, the pro-Beijing, pro-government, hard iron vote, well, there's a lot of softness or rust in that vote, is what we're finding. Now, that does not mean that people have turned against the Chinese government. What you have here is a comparison between the 1990s and 2011 about teaching political history of China and Hong Kong. And you can see that there's much more support for teaching the political history of China. We also have, whenever we raise this question about patriotic school plays or lessons, we've not had any increase in opposition. We had a neutral response back in the 1990s, which now has moved to the don't know, but we actually have a stronger support even for this than we had back in the 1990s. And singing the national anthem and having flag raising every day, unquestionably stronger support for this. So when we talk about dissatisfaction with the PRC's rule of China and even pro-DAB leaning respondents having some dissatisfaction, we're talking about something, I think, significant in terms of government performance and attitude towards government performance. And there's not been any drop in terms of people answering excited or proud on National Day, 1st of October. Okay, so again, we're not talking about shifts there. What we are talking about is whenever you take these people out, and of those who say they're proud and excited, this is the portion that says they're pro-DAB. That's it. This is of the people who are the most patriotic. Okay? So if you're going to characterize the DAB as the Patriots Party, well, there might be some dispute with that. And you can see it again on this chart as well, and breaking it down by satisfaction with the PRC rule of China. And those who say they have patriotic feelings, look at the proportion who are dissatisfied with the PRC government's rule of China. Now, it seems that there's a global wave of dissatisfaction with governments. Hong Kong is no exception. All right, what we also have is some changes, or are some changes, in what people tell us is their greatest problem of personal concern. And what you can see here is an increase in concerns over political issues. That's the brown colored, gold colored. Freedom of press and demonstration has increased across 2011 and up from 2010. And this is open-ended, reclassified. And whenever we ask people about the performance of the government dealing with their problem, besides the small proportion in bright yellow who have no problem or say it's not the government's business, please note again the shift from 2003, 2004, coming forward. This is about the most we've seen since about 2004 in terms of strong, very dissatisfied with the government's performance on dealing with their problem of greatest personal concern. All right, so let's take a look at voters. Have there been shifts there? Whenever we look at this question about asking people whether or not they believe that making the chief executive and LegCo members more accountable to voters with direct elections, and whether this would improve performance, we had a real worrying drop back in 2010, right after the constitutional reform vote. But it's gone back up now. People who believe that, yes, elections will improve things. And as Steve was hinting, whenever we ask people, well, are you going to vote for your current counselor or someone else, we find that only about 40% of people tell us they're either going to vote for the current counselor or someone else. A lot of people answer they don't know, or they're not going to vote, or they're not even registered for this DC election. Okay, this is people who claim that they're registered in other ways for other things. Right, so turnout, we think, is going to be fairly low. It doesn't mean that people believe less in principle in direct elections. You can see it very clearly here in terms of LegCo. Those same people who say they are registered voters with intentions to vote, that 41%, it's even stronger. You have about over 80%. For the chief executive, again, it's over 80% who believe in direct elections. When you ask it directly among those same people with intent to vote, the only one of these questions that shows a correlation is actually a strengthened in the orange, 78% who believe that all DC members should be directly elected. It's up from even a high majority among all the sample that we polled. They're very opposed to appointment. They support direct elections. People also believe that elected members, those people who are going to vote, believe more strongly that the elected DC members do a better job. I mean, you can see this, 71% of the folks who intend to go out to vote. And when we ask this question very bluntly, how important is it for your DC or counselor to support direct elections? You can see of those people who say that they're registered to vote, it's either a great deal or some importance is a majority, a clear majority. And what's odd, what's strange, is that it looks like, despite this, well, we're going to have a lot of votes for people who may or may not be supporting direct elections the way we might think. So we break this down a little bit further. If you start looking, for example, this is among the everybody, the whole survey, the difference between people who like or not like their district counselor to be affiliated with a political party, you can see there's about 4% in favor of that affiliation. When you look at the people who are actually going to say that they've made up their mind about who to vote for, it rises from 4 to 8 liking. So people like that affiliation with a political party. when you look at the two coalitions, the two groups, the pan-democratic or the pro-government camp, again, among the whole sample, it's down 8, more people who dislike than like for the pan-democrats, down 19 for the pro-government group, and of those people who say they're going to vote, it drops to only -2 for the pan-democrats, but increases to -22 for the pro-government group. So, just to make it clear for you, there's the picture. And you can get the chart. One more measure. Again, of does your preferred candidate or party for DC support or oppose directly electing members of the district councils? We made it as clear as you could ask. And of those people who say they intend to vote, you can see a distinct increase in the proportion who say they support that their candidate, preferred candidate, supports direct elections. What's disturbing is that 47% of these people who say that they've already selected a candidate to vote for, that they intend to vote, well, they don't know. They don't know what their candidate's position is. And that raises questions about just how these elections are being conducted and how we are actually getting out the information about who supports what and how much we are permitted to get out the information about which candidates support what. So, what do we have? We have dissatisfaction with the Hong Kong government is high and much higher than in 2007. With the PRC government, same thing, higher than at any time since 1997. We have the Patriots more dissatisfied than ever, than we have ever measured. We have support for direct elections higher than we have ever measured. Democrats should be walking away with this race. This should be another 2003 wave election. But it's not. Why? Well, you can see it here. When we ask people whether they think political parties generally are doing improving things or making things worse, then look at the difference between 2007 and today in terms of bad effect. It's much larger, much smaller people saying good effect. When we ask people about which party best represents them, you can see this is right after the constitutional reform vote, and we had a clear majority of people who were naming a party. Now, it's way under a majority. Okay, and you can see the fragmentation in the graph itself. In terms of registered voters who intend to vote, with intention to vote, even there, it's not up to a majority. Even there, it's higher than among the average sample and among those who have no intentions to vote or are not registered. There are also mixed feelings about whether or not they want these candidates to go on and run for one of the Super LegCo seats. It's going to be, I think some people might be surprised to find their district councilor running for one of these LegCo seats. In terms of how are the parties doing, this is the data that includes all the don't knows and so forth. You can see that LSD and People Power have very negative views by most people. The Democratic Party is next, then followed by the DAB. If you take the don't knows out, and if zero becomes the balance between satisfaction and dissatisfaction, if it's above the line, it's more satisfied than dissatisfied with the performance of that party. If it's below the line, it's more dissatisfied than satisfied. You start tracking it down across time, as this chart does. You find from 2007, from the last election, we go over now to the, this is the whole sample, and this is of the voters, people who say they've made up their mind. You can see that never before has satisfaction and dissatisfaction among the parties been so narrow. But there's not a gap in favor of the DAB as there was in 2007. Okay, very quickly wrapping up here. We have a variety of questions dealing with various issues, again, to try to look at what people are running on, what they might support. Again, in terms of the by-elections proposal, we have a pretty strong support about continuing the regular by-election process if it was involuntary. If it was voluntary, people support the idea of restricting them from running again before the next election. But then anything else, you really start to get more opposition than support. In terms of named concerns, the greatest is air pollution, corruption in mainland China, growing wealth gap, and an aging population. All of those have a majority of people concerned. Of a ranking question, you can see again corruption in mainland China. The wealth gap has somewhat shrunk a bit. Now, we do have an increase in people who rank free press higher. It's back where it was close to 210. All right, I'm going to stop here. Let Sunny pick up. Well, I've got 18 minutes. Can I go a couple minutes more? Okay. There's some really cool stuff in here about identity, and in the future there's going to be some real changes in that. We have seen for the first time some real shifts in identity, and that's in the report. That's probably the most substantial thing that we've seen, besides perhaps the changes of attitude toward the central government. All right, Sunny. Turning it over for Sunny now to give you the numbers.
For the reporter's friends, you can get the handouts on the table there. Now, here are the predictions that we make on the Sunday elections. The DAB FTU, they are nominating 237 candidates, and the predicted gains will be 94, about 40% of winning. Now, my predictions are more cautious, more conservative, in the sense that for those who will surely win, I will calculate that in this predicted table. Democratic Party is going to nominate 132 candidates, and they will likely capture 81 seats, so percentage around 64, perhaps a little bit higher. Then later on, as you can see from my conclusion, I will make some adjustment. Civic Party nominates 41 candidates. You know, if the Filipino domestic helpers issue is not really influencing the party, then they may be able to get more seats. If not, then the number of seats will be reduced to perhaps 14 or even less. So you can see the range here, 14 to 19, around 34% to 46%, or probably even less. Liberal Party nominating 24 candidates. Many of them are political unknowns, so it's very difficult for me to predict, but I think that they will likely get at least four seats, perhaps 16% to 20%. People Power nominates 59 candidates, but many of them are very young, very inexperienced, without previous campaign experience. So my estimate is only 5% of them will win the election. The League of Social Democrats is nominating 28 candidates, and 7 of them will likely win, with a percentage of 25%. Winning. New People's Party, led by Regina Yip, they are nominating 12 candidates, and 25% will likely capture the seats. ADPL will perform quite well, but in particularly in the area around Samshui Po. They are nominating 26 candidates, and so I predict that 17 of them will grab the seats with a percentage of 65%. Civic Force, as you all know, is very active in Sha Tin. And if you understand Hong Kong politics well, the Civic Force can be regarded as a peripheral organization of the DAB. And they nominate 21 candidates, and 14 of them will likely win with a winning percentage of 67%. Now, independents, almost 310 candidates. And here, ladies and gentlemen, you have to bear in mind that the independent candidates in Hong Kong, they are divided into three groups. One pro-Beijing, one pro-Democrats, and one really independent. So we have to go through the campaign leaflets very carefully to assess how many of them are really belonging to one of these particular three groups. And my estimate is that 116 of them will win the election with a winning percentage of 37%. So what is the conclusion? As you can see here, the overall estimated number of elected and automatically elected candidates of the DAB FTU will be 94 to 104. But if the Civic Force is included as a DAB peripheral organization, the DAB FTU Civic Force Alliance will be around 122 to 132. And the overall estimated number of elected and automatic candidates of the Democratic Party will be around 71 to 81. And most importantly, one third of the independents will likely be elected. As I mentioned to you earlier, the independents, we have to analyze them very carefully. For the pro-Beijing independents, they include the Civic Force. For the pro-democracy candidates, they include, number one, the Neo-Democrats, the Land Justice League, which is active in Yunlong, and also the Shenzhou Youth Service Center, a pro-Taiwan group, as well as the pro-democracy group, Power for Democracy. So their role will be extremely important after the elections because they will become the target of co-optation by both the Hong Kong government and Beijing. The voter turnout, as Professor Michael DeGolia mentioned, will be low, and we don't think that it will be high. The government hasn't made the extra efforts at promoting the elections through the rejection of election forums. So you can see that election forums are held by some district groups, RTHK and cable TV, and interestingly, some candidates do not attend the election forums. The lack of election forums makes citizens difficult to understand the forum of candidates easily and comprehensively. So this issue should be tackled by the Hong Kong government in the future. Candidates' profiles should be improved on the website of the elections because a few candidates surprisingly do not indicate their age, perhaps a privacy issue to a few of them. Ideally, candidates' leaflets should be more accessible to the public through the website of the district council's elections, although candidates do distribute their campaign leaflets to the voters on the streets. So overall, more work will have to be done to increase citizen interest and participation in election. And for the first time in Hong Kong's district council elections, the Power for Democracy nominates some candidates. And this can show a deliberate strategy on the part of the pan-democrats to nominate inexperienced and young candidates to stop the pro-Beijing candidates from easy victory. Many candidates are very young, including those affiliated with political parties, and this signals a kind of generational change in the development of political parties in Hong Kong and also the political participation in elections. So overall, these are the bold predictions made by us.
Yeah. Well, thank you both very much indeed. This is an immense amount of data to digest. I know that for the media, that the full results of this report are available. Having said that, the floor is now open. It's the usual procedure. This is open to everybody. Just identify who you are, and we'll take it from there. Well, if there's not an immediate question, let me ask an immediate question. The political power of the elected councillors is going to increase, yet this seems to be a studiously non-political election. How do you explain that?
Well, first, I think people are quite unaware of really what has happened with the constitutional reform that we had. Effectively, for years in Hong Kong politics, there's been a demand for referendums. They've tried to implement referendums. The Democrats have tried repeatedly to bring something like this about. We now have in place for the five seats, the five so-called super representative seats, a potential referendum platform. All you have to do is run a candidate with a very clear set of policy proposals or one single proposal. Vote for me, and we'll work out some sort of compromise to move towards full democracy, or we will bring about the direct election of the chief executive in a fair way. Or you can have another candidate run saying, look, if you vote for me, I'm going to stand on principle, and it's going to be full democracy, period. And if we don't get it, we're not going to compromise. In other words, you can have one group running as Democratic Party position or for the People's Power position, and let the people vote. Because people all across Hong Kong are going to be able to vote for their candidate who holds their position. And there is your chance to have a very clear referendum. But nobody is talking about this, because all of these people are going to be nominated, the people who will run for those five seats, nominated from the district councils. Secondly, what's going to happen is after these five people are elected by millions of votes, okay, we're going to have millions of votes cast, because it's everybody who is currently not in the functional constituencies has a vote now. As soon as those five members of the functional constituency are outvoted by 15 of the people who are now elected by just a few thousand people, you're going to have all those millions of people go, hold on a minute, you're telling me that we only have five seats and there's over 3 million of us. They have 15 seats, and eight of those seats are by corporations, they're not even people, and the others are elected. Some of those haven't even held elections in decades, and those people can somehow veto what the public supports, what the vast majority of people support. For the first time, people are going to pay attention to the rules of LegCo and what's happening in the functional constituencies. But again, this is not getting through. People are only looking at what I call drips and drains. They're looking at very local issues and don't realize now that the bottom is being now attached to the top. The bottom is going to be actually appointing or deciding or electing or choosing twice as many seats as the entire LegCo, four times as many seats as the directly elected LegCo members, putting them on the Chief Executive Election Committee. And those people are going to be a block of votes that could make the difference, particularly if we have a really contested chief executive election. But again, I think one of the biggest problems is that the government itself, the people who have been put in charge of these election processes, have interpreted or failed to interpret the rules in such a way that it has become more restrictive than campaigning on mainland China. If you're running for local elections in mainland China, you can do more on Twitter than you dare do in Hong Kong. Because in Hong Kong, if you do electronic stuff, you've got to print it out and register it, and they have a guy in charge who apparently has never even answered his own telephone.
Okay, there's a question down here.
That's a quick question.
Just identify who you are.
My name's Bob. Just want to ask a quick question on the statistical significance of the results that you've done. Obviously, Hong Kong, not everyone on the street would like to respond and tell you of their true opinion or on the telephone, whatnot. So obviously, those people respond to the survey are more likely to get involved in an election or more likely to give you an opinion. I'm just wondering, have you ever collected out of maybe 1,000 telephone that you make out there, how many people actually respond to your survey? Because that would make a very significant statistical mark to test whether or not the results are just a biased sample on the people who want to respond, and thus those people wanting to vote as well. Thanks.
Yeah, this is kind of statistics 101. We've done this for a long time, and yes, we pay attention to that. Our response rate is around half the people who we talk to, we call, respond, and then it's a total of about a third who complete. It's a survey that runs about 21 minutes. But if you run the demographics on it, over time, we've done over 100 of these surveys. We come out pretty close to the same thing the Census Department comes out with. We work pretty hard, you know, on, for example, getting older ladies who are less educated. You'll find that we do pretty well in that. Actually, I think our statistics come closer to the Census Department statistics than anybody else in terms of getting older ladies without education, which is a tough group to crack, okay, because many times they don't want to talk on the phone. But we've got a really good, where's my research assistant? Huike, yeah, there she is. She's been doing this a long time, and she's from a New Territories family, so she's quite persuasive with some of these older ladies.
Fiji, down here.
Gurney. Michael, a couple of questions. First one is a more immediate one, and that is you mentioned a sense of identity among people. Are you referring to people or or candidates and their political affiliations. That's a simple one. The second, and a bit more complicated, and I'm extrapolating from your surveys here, is it fair to say that the district council and then them electing five members to LegCo and so on and so forth is just essentially what the future of one country, one system means for China? I mean, they're trying to already copy Singapore and trying to do, okay, our village level, township level elections, we'll make them free for all. And then after that, we'll control whoever comes out on top, right up to the NPC at the center. Is it being kind of put in practice and tried out in Hong Kong, according to you?
You're going to get figures.
When you raise this question about identity, I can't help but be, this is the thing I've written a lot on, and I found absolutely fascinating. Yes, on identity, absolutely. I'm going to skip forward to that. If I can get to it here, let's see. Where is my sample? It should be right there. Yes, right here. Okay, let's start from here, see if it'll go. Yeah. We've been asking this question about how people identify themselves for a very long time. You can see back to 1993. And we read these categories out about which is the most appropriate description. In the previous survey, we had this anomaly. We suddenly had about 1 out of 4 people telling us an other answer. It turns out that it was Chinese Hong Konger, not Hong Kong Chinese, not Chinese, but Chinese Hong Konger. And so we asked the same question the same way, and we got almost identical response. 26% told us Chinese Hong Konger. And so when you start digging around into that, you find out that it's not just, I mean, there are a lot of younger people, but also it cuts across. It cuts across ages. And it's not just people born on the mainland, because it's equal proportions of people who answer this who are born in mainland China or in Hong Kong. Okay? Something very interesting here is going on. And if you go back in the past, one reason why this is most exciting, anytime a social scientist can present a hypothesis, have a theory, and then have it borne out. The theory years ago that we came up with by analyzing the results of mainland-born Chinese is after they spend about 12 to 15 years or so, 15 years is a nice cutoff, in Hong Kong, they change their identity responses. About anywhere from 20 to 30% or more shift their identity responses after a period of time. And you can see it in this chart. Here we have, after 15 years, you can see a jump in people who say Hong Kong person. And before the Chinese Hong Konger answer, this was even larger. And so our hypothesis was, sometime around 12, 15 years after 1997, something should happen in terms of identity, since Hong Kong became part of China. There should be something about identity taking place. And if you go back to that original chart, you can see that at the handover, we had this jumping about because of this change of relationship. Interestingly enough, it looks like there was kind of a temporary anomaly around the 2008 Olympics. Things went back to, quote, normal, but then something has seemingly fundamentally shifted at about the same time frame as we saw the shifts among mainland Chinese. So there's something going on up here in Hong Kongers' heads. And whenever we break it down in terms of these same identities, okay, in terms of which party represents them best, you can see among Chinese, it's clearly the DAB. Hong Kong Chinese, a smaller proportion. And among now these Chinese Hong Kongers, something in between, it seems like. And same thing in terms of feelings on National Day. Chinese Hong Konger is right here. Hong Kong Chinese, these are the two other categories we've had. So something very interesting in identity appears to be happening. There's a lot more work that needs to be done on this. Believe me, we will be tracking it. But this is why we call it the transition project. The transition was not just pulling the flags up and down. You know, there was a lot more going on. And the most interesting stuff, as I said at the time, was going to happen after 1997.
Okay. Can I ask Sunny a specific question? Oh, sorry.
Two questions.
Your second question very briefly was?
One system.
Yeah, you mentioned Singapore. We mentioned Singapore too. I mean, some of the rules that we have restricting the campaigning here sound more like Singapore than even mainland China local elections. So I'm really not sure what the government's doing, putting people in charge who have no clue. I mean, literally clueless about both the modern age and clueless about elections. Is that deliberate, or is that just another example of Donald Zhang's seeming great ability to appoint people of very high talent?
There's a question down here. Sorry, Laurent.
Thank you. I'm Florence de Changy. I report for Le Monde. I've got two questions. Sorry, I need my glasses. Yes, you mentioned issues and worries and how they've evolved. Could you elaborate a little bit on this? Issues and worries? You mentioned, you know, pollution, corruption, etc. If you could elaborate just a little bit on how it changed. And the other one was if you've tried to establish some kind of connection between the political mood, which shows growing discontent, and the economic situation. I'm sure you have.
Yeah, let me do the last one. I mean, it's really interesting that we have about the lowest proportion we've polled of people or surveyed of people saying they're worried about their job, about employment or unemployment. So it seems like the economic side, if you take the wealth gap out and you reclassify the wealth gap as a political issue rather than an economic issue, because it's both, okay? You find out that economic concerns are very low in comparison from what they have been in the past. So that's not what's behind the discontent. When we look at the folks who talked to us about mainland China, we had a follow-up focus group, which was a random selection of the random selection. Okay, so we randomly selected people who had responded to the questionnaire, and then we asked them to come in for a focus group. And in this focus group, some of the concerns they had, of course, air pollution. A lot of people in Hong Kong believe that a lot of it is coming from across the border. A lot of people also believe that inflation is being imported into Hong Kong. I think that's an interesting one as a political economist. Again, I'm not so sure they're correct about that, because it's coming as much from the Fed as it is from Beijing. But there's a clear sense that the food prices and the food comes from China, and that's where they're seeing the inflation. So again, they're concerned about that. Housing prices and housing issues have been a big concern, and mainland demand on housing in Hong Kong has driven prices up, particularly at the margin. And then a lot of those houses seem to sit empty, you know, dark, and people see that. They see the lights off. They see the lights never coming on. And so there have been a whole series of reasons why I think people have had a rising discontent with the central government and the way the central government is running things and the way the local government is basically letting itself be, as they see it, run over in some sense.
Okay, we have a question down here.
Hi, Asad Beg from the European Union office. Thank you for the presentation. I was just wondering, it's entitled Local Elections, Long-Term Effects. What are the long-term effects as regarding the LegCo elections, the next ones coming next year? And what do you think about looking further afield, further into the future, as and when we have universal suffrage? And maybe if I can slip a quick one in the closer medium term, what do you think the impact of the local elections will be on the mood music as regards the chief executive selection? Thank you.
I think the longer term stuff, for example, has to do with the five super delegates, whether or not they are turned into referendum elections. It's basically this gift that's been gift wrapped and handed to the pan Democrats if they want to run that way. If they run that way, then they can get the referendum. If they're really serious about it, it's there now. Structurally, they can do it. There it is. Make of it as you wish, okay, what you want. Instead of having to do all the stupid by-election stuff and resign and the big antics, stick your neck out. Run on your platform. Call for a mandate. Okay? They can do it now. I really think the big thing is if they do that, and if they get then those popular policies with say a million votes behind them, gets vetoed by, you know, a virtually invisible shadowy group of these functional constituency members who actually are nominated to vote for corporations and then disappear. We have no idea who these people are. I mean, literally, we have no idea who they are. And after they voted, they disappear. Okay, who are these people? I think there's going to be a lot of questions raised about that. Right at the moment, since people have no vote in that side, they don't raise any questions. But now they've got a vote on that side. And suddenly they're going to go, who made up those rules? Okay. Thirdly, the longer term effect is, you know, since all of those LegCo members, all 60 of them, are almost outnumbered 2-1 by district council people, suddenly if you want to talk to somebody about the chief executive, you don't have to try to catch one of these 60 councilors. You go down three doors down, Mr. Chan, I voted for you. Who are you going to vote for chief executive? And they're going to discuss the merits of that. Okay, it brings it down to the grassroots. Now, I don't think the chief executive candidates, and I'm particularly thinking of one, have yet realized that. Okay, going around on the cocktail circuit is not where those votes are going to be decided.
Ching Chong, I'm sorry, this is going to be our last question.
Yeah, Michael, since you have been monitoring the pulse of Hong Kong people for so long, what's your gut feeling about the result this Sunday? And since the Sunday election will potentially return super legislators, do you discern any difference in public interest in the coming election? Thank you.
Well, Sonny's got the specific numbers, but that last thing. Every time we've looked at election before in which the appointed portion of it got less or disappeared, there was a rise in turnout, okay? Always in the past. But this election looks like an exception. I mean, it shouldn't be. And the Democrats should be walking away with it, and there should be a bigger turnout and all this other kind of stuff. But I think that the constitutional reform issue and the split, I mean, there is no really pan-Democrats anymore. And this small group of people who say that the majority of people who supported constitutional reform are anti-democratic, which I think is frankly nuts, okay? A democracy means majority rule. The majority supported the constitutional reforms, it passed. You should accept what the majority decided. When you reject what the majority decided, you're not democratic. It's just the opposite. It's Bolshevik, okay, by definition. So I think that the Bolsheviks are doing a great job of handing, Hong Kong's Bolsheviks are doing a great job of handing the elections over to the Bolsheviks in Beijing.
Can I just say something?
Sure. I think I can supplement Michael's point. I think there is a gap between public interest in this election and the political significance of this Sunday election in terms of electing five candidates to the Legislative Council. As our findings show, not many citizens are really supportive of the idea of having district councillors becoming legislative councillors. This means that many people in Hong Kong at the grassroots level, they hope that their district councillors are really fighting for the interests of the districts or their constituencies. So there is, number one, a gap between public interest and the political significance of this election. And to answer that gentleman's question on the long-term effects, as Michael mentioned, I think one important long-term effect is that both the pro-Beijing camp and the pro-democracy camp will calculate the number of votes gained by the two factions in this district-level election. Because by calculating all the total amount of votes or the percentage of votes grasped by the two major camps in this district level elections, they will be able to assess the possibility of their candidates being elected in the forthcoming Legislative Council election. In other words, this Sunday election will have a very important barometer implication for the Legislative Council election. In the short run, as you may not have noticed, the Democrats, actually, they are coordinating among themselves quite well. When I take a look at some constituencies and districts, for example, the League of Social Democrats and the People Power, both groups have been emphasized by the mass media in Hong Kong as competing among themselves. But if you take a look at the candidates that they are nominating in all the 18 districts, the League of Social Democrats actually is avoiding any competition with the People Power. That's number one. And number two, if you take a look at the Power for Democracy, the pro-democracy group led by Professor Joseph Chen, they are doing quite well, although they nominate young and inexperienced candidates. But the major objective is very clear. They are trying to stop the pro-Beijing and pro-establishment candidates from easy victory. From this perspective, I think the Hong Kong Chinese mass media has already played down the importance of the coordination among the pro-democracy camp. So from this perspective, I think the pro-democracy camp will do quite well in this Sunday election.
Well, thank you both very much indeed. This is, as ever, a very meaty, data-filled event. We're very grateful to you for that. And I ask you to show your appreciation in the normal way. We have, I'll hand it out later, but it's the FCC's bad practice to offer bribes to everybody who comes to speak here. These come in the form of absolutely priceless FCC outer garment covering, which you will go away with. Thank you very much.
Subject to another photograph, I'm afraid.
Sure.